Welcome to the Shift Happens podcast, where we explore the latest trends and insights in the digital workplace. From the role of AI in the workplace to the future of remote work, we cover it all. Tune in as we chat with industry leaders and experts. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started in the digital landscape, we've got you covered. Subscribe to Shift Happens wherever you listen to podcasts and stay ahead of the curve.
In this episode, we deep dive into a project I'm seeing pop up more and more, consolidating tenants and services. I talked to Yo about how his company ended up with two tenants in the first place and strategies for minimizing business disruption, going through discovery with business owners, and measuring the happiness factor.
Shift Happens podcast.
He was very fond of working together. And what you saw back then was actually people having multiple identities. I was Yo in Belgium, but I was also Yo in the Netherlands because you wanted to work together. But this is not a sustainable situation, obviously. So there was a real need to have mixed country teams, to have a good engagement, a good communication. And that is really the cornerstone of every company.
Podcast. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Shift Happens. Boy, it's hard to believe how many of these we've done already. If you've been with us since the start and listened to every guest, please hit me up on Twitter or LinkedIn. I'd love to hear from you and get your feedback. Of course, I'm your host, Dr. Raymond Tsai, Chief Brand Officer of AvePoint, Modern Workplace Professional, Microsoft MVP, and Regional Director. I'm so excited today to be joined by Yo Gerhards, a Business Unit Manager, Platform Services at Ordina. Yo, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Dux, for having me.
Yo, before we get started, can you tell everybody where you're out of, what part of the world you're in, and what's the weather like these days?
Yeah, sure, I can. I'm from Belgium. And we're working for Ordina, which is a Benelux company of about 3,000 consultants. We're back based in Belgium, one of the countries. It's a Benelux group, and actually the weather here is fairly rainy nowadays. That's a bit a sad thing, but nevertheless, we Belgians know how to appreciate some rain. So,
and I'm sure despite that, you can enjoy your great chocolates that you offer the world, right?
Yeah, chocolates and French fries.
There you go. So how's business been, especially in light of the past couple months? How are you helping your customers go through this period of remote work and still helping them fulfill their business goals?
Yeah, it's been special, to say the least. COVID and the whole pandemic situation brought our community to a certain stop in March. Nevertheless, we noticed at Ordina, also through our offering of the workplace, digital workplace, that we were in the right position to start helping customers. So we did a number of initiatives where we launched some campaigns to help new and existing customers get up to speed real fast. We had some customers that had experienced some downtime because they weren't actually counting on having everyone working remotely together. And that was a problem for them, also in business continuity. So we helped them because, yeah, we're used to working from home and working remotely and keeping up our productivity. So we brought that experience on a functional and how to do it level, but also on a technical level. That's what we did. And we have never experienced, let's say, a more special situation, but also our productivity numbers from our teams were actually skyrocketing, obviously due to the fact that they were helping all of these customers. And also what we saw is that, for instance, sick leave was actually something which was dropping drastically. So people were healthy because they didn't have anyone except for their people in the house that they could.
Yeah. That's true.
So very,
And that's kind of the irony of all this, right? Of course, we want to be protected and not get infected, but as a result, not going out, not mingling with people. And I see people are having a healthier lifestyle as well, right? Exercising more, walking and running and eating better.
Indeed.
And people are, in some sense, are healthier.
Yeah, indeed. We have, you know how IT people are, obviously. They tend to spend a lot of time in front of the laptop and getting into the technical things. But we stimulate them to have a good outdoors life as well. And that's also been a positive experience. I think after this period, the people will not return to normal. This has become the new normal.
Absolutely. And I'm sure a lot of the guidance you're offering customers is a result of your own experience internally. You recently completed a very ambitious project where you combined your Netherlands and Belgian modern workplace into a single system. But as a single company, why were they separated in the first place?
Well, actually, it's a good question. As from back in the day, we started the company in 1973, and then the company was a smaller company in the French speaking part, and then it's turned over to the Dutch speaking part. So historically, countries were separated, were standalone, and actually started initiatives on IT in a very standalone way. That's why we had Active Directory separated tenants, environments on Office 365 in all countries. So that's something that we wanted to remediate with the one global project, and which we successfully realized.
Got it. And I would imagine having these two different ecosystem makes collaboration a little more challenging, right? And creates other issues. So is this why there's this movement towards consolidation?
Yeah, actually, what we saw is, let's say 2 years ago, we saw an uprise, or even 3 years ago, our CEO, Jo Maas, became the head of the entire company. And he was very fond of working together. And what you saw back then was actually people having multiple identities. I was Jo in Belgium, but I was also Jo in the Netherlands because you wanted to work together. But this is not a sustainable situation, obviously. So there was a real need to have mixed country teams, to have a good engagement, a good communication. And that is really the cornerstone of every company. And even if you're multi-country, then it's necessary to be one and to talk as one voice. And that's why we saw the necessity on a business level, but also on a day-to-day working together level. And that's where we made sure that we became one and migrated to one tenant.
Well, that's great that the motivation came from leadership, came from your CEO, because we see a lot of consolidation projects. It's typically centered around cutting costs, whereas yours was built around improved collaboration and operations. So once the, at least at the highest level, right, the CEO was all for it, was it hard to sell it to other leadership or other business units, or was everybody on board with this consolidation exercise?
I think I was in the midst of having the discussions once it came to the unit management level. But the talks of the entire community, let's say, were very positive because people were experiencing some negative impact on logging in, identity, which data is where, how can we collaborate better together. I didn't see that kind of information. I didn't notice the news. Those were things that back then we heard quite often. So in that area, there was little resistance, though on certain levels, as you might expect in a company of 3,000 people, there were some people that were against it, usually. So that's where the human change management comes in as well. The articulation of why you need to do these things, what's in it for them, And also having a community built of champions at the start of the project, but also during and after, really have the sense in the management of the project, have the sense of where are the people coming from? What is their needs? Are they changed? Are we lacking information there? Those type of things. So change management in this type of project is really important.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a great initiative. And as you move forward, right, I understand for this project alone, you had 20 full-time project team members consolidating 12 terabytes in at least the first wave was 1,000 users over 6 months. This is pretty impressive in this short period of time. So when you got started, what were you nervous about?
What was I nervous about? Good question. Well, personally, my team was actually doing the job. And other than with other customers, we are not in the midst of being migrated. So we were kind of a little nervous because we were actually the ones being migrated and we were doing it ourselves. So it was at first a little nerve-wracking, I wouldn't say, but an attention point. I also, as you might know, doing a project for your own company is usually the project which has the most attention. It has to be first time right. It has to be of very high quality, and they're more critical internally than usually external. But we got it right. We dropped the ball here and there. Sometimes you can't have them all right. But the experience overall was very good. We got high ratings.
So, and that's typically the case. I mean, even for us, sometimes I think about it, oh, yeah, we're the experts. We have technologies around migration, helping manage and govern, and then protect customers' data. And then when we do it to ourselves, we're like, we're used to doing this, but this is something obviously much more critical, right? Yeah. Because you don't want it to fail. You want it to be perfect. You want everything to work. So you always think about that in the back of your mind.
And first, when we started the project, but before we started the project, we did some sessions with Microsoft and to get some idea on who has migration experience, what are best practices that we can learn before starting, because it was actually moving the entire cloud. So going ranging from Office 365, Teams, Sway, everything actually to another environment, which was a foreign environment to our tenant. I used to have this analogy I used for people in non-technical positions to understand. And I said, well, actually, it's like moving an entire apartment, everything in each apartment, so the whole block, and moving it from one weekend to another, and just putting everything back where it belongs, and then having people get in and do their job. Obviously, it's a big timeline and a lot of planning that needs to go prior to that. You can't just say back up and leave and do that. It has been some months.
When you got started, being a large organization like you are, you don't just typically, you know, move point A to point B. Did you need to go through a data discovery process? Did you find anything that you don't need to migrate or got rid of? Anything that maybe, you know, redundant, obsolete, or trivial? How did you go through that exercise?
Well, first of all, we selected you as a partner because we were working together prior to this project, but we started working together on this project end to end, and we did some discovery processes on the technical level. And with that technical information, the lists and the things like that, we did some roadshows with different business units, and we came across some things that we didn't think about. For instance, we had a unit with a certain name in Belgium, and the same name was actually used in the Netherlands, which was good. But if you just migrate point blank, then you would have had a lot of conflicts and a lot of possible issues. So we came up with a clear what to migrate list. We came up with a clear nomenclature or governance, let's say, and naming conventions. And then we did some pre-migration initiatives, and we also included well, multiple people from the different business units into our projects. That's why we came up with about 20 FTE in full, because it was, yeah, rather a lot of information and it needed to be cleaned as well.
So it sounds like in the new environment, right, where based on the analysis you did, you formulated certainly a new taxonomy that would work for this consolidated environment. How about some of the considerations around data protection, governance, or even records management process? How did you think about that in a practical way without overthinking it? That may take too long.
Well, actually, that was where our security team comes in, because that's actually something they are also aligned with. So records management is something that we had that going on in other environments. So that's not something that we implemented right away on our new Office 365 environment. We did, however, came up with a unified taxonomy, but we keep that lean. That's also what we believe at customers. There's no way that people are using a good taxonomy of more than, let's say, 40 to 50 content types with all of those different metadata in there. There's no people using that. You can put it in place. It will not work. So we keep it lean. We keep it, let's say, below a certain amount, and then manage it as it goes by, as the time goes by, because it grows and changes with your company as well.
So as you pursued this migration, how did you focus on minimizing business disruption? As I may imagine, right, these two environments are production environment. People are using it day in, day out. So what are some of the strategies you've done to ensure people can still be productive in their day-to-day work?
Yeah, very good question, because that was what I just said earlier. My biggest concern, because we were doing the migrations, but it was only one project and we were migrating ourselves. Meanwhile, we had several of other projects going on, so we could not have any disruptions. What we did, we worked with a good test environment, good pre-production tests that we did. So we minimized the disruption to the end users to, let's say, a minimum of, well, actually zero, because we selected a weekend during which the incremental final migration took place. So you heard me say incremental. That means a lot of the migration was actually back in the background, already finished. But the incremental migration was actually done during a certain weekend, where we had 3 days. And that meant people were actually out, not in the office. Usually you have engaged people that are working during the weekends or that are trying to get to some data. And we really communicated to those people, to everyone, well, please do not log on after Friday evening and do not log on prior to Tuesday. And then when they did do a logon, they had a certain checklist that they had to go through. And that was the only disruption in their time spent. Actually, we were fairly proud to have this minimal disruption in the end.
Hello, Shift Happens podcast listeners. I have an exciting offer for you. Join us for our in-person Shift Happens conference, October 10 to 11 in Washington, D.C. Registration is free. That's right, it's free. And you'll walk away with actionable strategies from industry leaders and peers to make Shift happen in your digital workplace. Visit shifthappens.to to register today. We'll see you there.
Well, I'm sure they're happy because you gave them the weekend off pretty much, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But as from a business continuity perspective, we have some units working, obviously. So we notified them that for them there were a few hours, and we made it specifically clear to them to have backup scenarios like ordinary phones and things like that.
Sure. What type of activities did you have to do?
That's a very good question. And you might indeed think that we as being a technological company would not need that much of a change management, but we had two distinct type of tenants. One was actually open and very free to configure by the end users, and the other one was very closed and restricted. So we had to bring that to a common ground. And then obviously also what we needed to do was to communicate our governance and our new approach of things. We also have obviously non-technical personnel. So a change of tenant is also something new to them. It's something that they experienced. The one tenant was actually a little different from the other one, being further on in the chain and more open. For instance, you might have, I'm going to give an example on Teams. You have these theater views right now, but not all tenants have them already. So those were type of changes that we really came across. The one were actually more into Power BI, the other ones didn't. So that's change management that you need to align on so that everyone has the same common knowledge, the same common ground, and the same principles of how do you use Teams, what do you do in channels, how do you manage it, where can you ask Teams for? What is the launch procedure of a new team? Those were really different in both companies, in both countries. Yeah?
So now that you've completed it and looking back, what type of metrics did you put together to see if the project was successful or not? And if so, how is it coming along?
So first of all, we did... On the metric part, we did a survey to the community, both communities, having a number of questions, very open and closed questions, so that we could also, based on that, calculate a happiness factor. That was one thing. On the facts and figures also, on the technical perspective, we had some facts and figures, obviously, of about terabytes, gigabytes, things like that, to really compare. And also on the governance level, we put on some metrics of who was in the governance process, and who would remain in the governance process. And then obviously, looking backward now, we have seen an increase of happiness of 7 towards now 7.8, so practically a full point, which is a very good number, and we're happy about it. But we will continue measuring that in the near future.
So I want to unpack that further. This is the first time, which is great, I've heard about happiness factors in an Office 365 deployment, and I think that should be standard. So what do you mean by happiness factor? Is there any specific characteristics that you include in the happiness factor? Is it ease of use? Is it better to work on documents? So can you talk more about this happiness factor?
Yeah, it's ease of use in the sense of finding information, ease of working together, and it should have gone up. Right? That was our idea as well. Because formerly they had to switch teams to start working in one team and then switch teams back again. So those were annoying facts. So that's one of the elements that increases that factor. Another one was actually also related to the entire workplace. So people coming from the Belgian side were actually happy because now they came into a more open tenant, so they could do more themselves. And they had more of a functionality perspective available, which they hadn't before because they came from the more restricted side. And then obviously also from a perspective of a landing page and actually a governance aspect, they were also happy about the way they could now request some new things, that things speeded up. In the help, friendliness was also one of the aspects in the support after the project. So people from our service team providing support. Proactiveness factor was also one of them. So having the first time right closure of a question. If I just give a phone call and I have a question on the Office 365 tenant, they used to have multiple service teams. Now it's one service team. So that's all beneficial to the experience.
Got it. So really, you're looking at the entire experience, the entire interaction, not just from a technical perspective, but also from my interaction with the IT organization.
Indeed.
And also my interaction with my colleagues, like you described, right? Switching tenants and all that. So I really like that. I really like that idea of this happiness factor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we see how can you quantify that? Usually there's no means in quantifying happiness, but that's why we measure it on a frequent basis to also get some feedback. And there were open questions, but also closed questions. And it's the open questions there where you get the real feedback. And that's something that we use to improve our workplace offering.
Got it. And, we can go on, but one last question I'd love to ask you is, looking back on this whole project, what was that key moment, that one moment that made this shift, that made this project successful for your team? How did you actually make that shift happen at your organization during this project?
Yeah, I think there were a number of things. Actually, the first day, I remember it well, it was a Tuesday. The Tuesday that we went live in the morning, myself as well, I logged on my machine, followed the procedure, everything went smooth. That was the first moment of, this is completed, this is done. And then you can imagine, instead of seeing 800 people, all of a sudden you see 2,800 people and you see a community, you see a lot of content of one another, and you get the idea of, this was why we did it on a content level and on a working together level. This is now very easy. Then afterwards, during the project closure meetings, we also obviously got some nice feedback on the survey, as I mentioned, and also nice feedback on and compliments to the project manager from our senior leadership team, saying this was a very smooth project, but also that they really liked the results of being able to communicate real fast with their peers in the leadership team of Belgium, and the whole experience of having one environment was actually the start of building on, because now we had a common ground, which was necessary to start other initiatives and building on top of that. So that was actually the time when I experienced myself saying, hey, this was great, this was successful. And actually also, we did a small prediction on the number of incidents or support requests we would have gotten. And the amount that we predicted was actually two times higher than we actually got. So that was actually a good experience.
So as we wrap up, for our friends listening to this episode, what advice would you give, especially for those pretty much doing a tenant-to-tenant migration similar to what you did? And what tips would you offer them so at least they'll get started in the right footing?
Yeah, I would say planning is key. Having a very good test experience, a test environment where you can do very good test scenarios multiple times. And obviously, I would also say from the bottom of my heart, having a good migration tool experience. AvePoint really was great in that area. We had very good contacts, very good support. So the migration tool is very crucial in that area to limit the downtime of the people. And last but not least, very important, invest a lot of time in change management, in the sense, what's in it for them, in making it clear, getting away frustration out of your project early on. So discussing with all types of leadership through the company, having them in a face-to-face meeting. Because one of the things we've learned as well, and we keep on learning on a day-to-day basis, people tend to not read anymore. They don't like large texts. So make small videos, make sure that you're in a leadership meeting with them, take 5 or 10 minutes and explain, and they'll listen. And then you can follow up on that. That's really crucial.
Yeah, no, love it. And definitely don't forget the happiness factor. Everybody should have that.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed.
Thank you so much for your time. We definitely appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And again, I'd like to thank everybody for listening. And if you've enjoyed this conversation, we would appreciate if you subscribe and tell all your friends and family about this. Until the next time, be safe, wash your hands, and wear your mask.
Shift Happens Podcast.
Wow, what an episode. One of the recurring lessons that we're seeing this season is that sometimes the business justification isn't about the dollars and cents. It's about how we can keep our employees engaged, happy, and productive. In this case, it's what Yo said about the Tuesday he woke up and saw the entire company online in one place as one community. For Ordina, that type of community and collaboration will prove priceless. This episode also underscored that moving data isn't the hard part. It's coordinating with the business owners in avoiding business disruption. These projects are high visibility, so you want to get them right. Let's remember not to skip on discovery or testing. And at the end of the day, we want to make sure everybody's happy. Until the next time.
Shift Happens Podcast. Shift Happens Podcast.
Shift Happens Podcast is a production of AvePoint, Inc., produced and edited by the AvePoint brand team. Stay up to date on the latest trends in digital workplace transformation by visiting avpoint.com.